With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Durbit, 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 durbit. Give me back my dog. You can't take my dog on that airplane. I'm not buying a ticket.
I'm not buying a ticket.
I thought I'd try. I like the songs at the start, but I think the music I like has a storytelling element in it normally, and it doesn't. The start songs don't normally do that.
So yeah. Yeah,
that was a song called where a guy stole someone's dog and hopped right on a plane, and the person loved their dog, but not enough to buy a ticket to board the plane.
Yeah. Wow, I mean, yeah. See, this is why it's great to be able to hear the story from the artist, like the story behind the story, because my interpretation in my head was that for some reason they were also being told they'd have to buy a ticket for the dog, and now I realize that makes no sense at all, but... But that was the way I took it. And I just thought, oh, this is a bit quirky. But I realized that the way you're telling it makes so much more sense. There's so much more depth.
See, I thought it was good hearing the story from the artist because I didn't know there was a story.
Yeah.
The only words that I heard was, I didn't buy a ticket like that. And that would have been enough for me. I want you to know that you brought more than was necessary.
Oh, great.
So there's storytelling, and then there's storytelling, which is where you tell people that you're telling a story.
Yeah.
And that's kind of quite an important part we're learning, because otherwise they might just think it's unrelated words.
Especially if they weren't listening, but they love stories.
They love stories, hate listening.
Yeah.
But if you can give them a heads up that a story might be happening.
Or had happened, they'll perk up and ask you to repeat it.
But they won't listen.
Maybe.
But they just like the idea that a story was told.
Is it interesting that jokes don't work if you have to explain the joke, but stories only work if you do explain the story?
is
a story not just explaining what the story is?
It could be mostly visual.
Yeah.
And then, but then really you're just translating the story from visual into auditory.
Yeah, buddy, have you ever seen WALL-E?
That's
mostly visual, man. No one's telling that story. Anyway, you're listening to Two in the Think Tank, the podcast where we come up with five sketch ideas.
And with us in the tank is friend of the tank and Alistair.
And you.
you had a special way you wanted to introduce the guest. Oh, you talked about it beforehand. You made a big deal of it.
Oh, he's internet celebrity Jack Drews.
That's right.
Thank you.
I don't think we've ever applauded a single audience member.
That's great. I was thinking about this on the way in. I think I've brought both good and evil to this podcast in my brief appearances, because I think I started the idea of going through the sketches and saying which ones Ants would like.
Yes, sure. You're the godfather of...
I love listening to that. I'm a huge fan of that. But I think I also started the tradition of using the three words to fuck with you guys, and I'm so sorry about that. I didn't mean to do that.
I think that's okay.
Hey, it's been okay. People have stopped fucking with us recently with the three words.
Sometimes we just fuck with ourselves.
Yeah.
We come pre-fucked. you know, sometimes the words that fuck with us unfuck us, and then we're just guys, you know.
Unfucked guys.
Yeah.
So... thank you for coming on here, Jack Drews. You've had, in the past, so many podcasts.
Yeah, it's not so much a compliment. It's just not being able to stick to doing things.
You're a walking podcast graveyard.
I am. I look through, I see the ghosts of all in this room, the ghosts of all the podcasts I've ever tried. I look through those ghosts.
Your podcast is littered with corpses.
Yeah. It's a real audio graveyard. I think it's like you are, because you like podcasts and you think I should do one. Mm. And then you do one and you forget that, like, well, these take work, and also people don't listen to them right away. You got to do them for a while before people start listening. And then I was like, well, I didn't factor on this at all.
Well, I think we've had one advantage over you in that regard, is in that you listen to our podcast. So we've always had at least one listener that we can count on, you know, like a rock solid, you know.
Yeah.
Even when you stop listening, when you stop recording podcasts, I would still listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I would open up your page on the iTunes thing, and I would just imagine what you might be saying.
Well, could you tell us one of the sketches that you imagined?
That we might have come up with that will save us a lot of trouble.
Food aquarium.
Well, there you go. So it's you go to a place, let's say a restaurant, and there's an aquarium there. And in there, there's like animals and stuff, like sort of aquatic ones. And you get to pick which one you want, and then they'll cook it in the back.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good sketch idea.
What about this, though? Like, you go to the aquarium and you see all the fish and so on being fed in their aquatic environment. And I reckon a lot of the time you sort of get a little jealous of them being able to just sort of swim around, you know, swim through a school of food with their mouth open and just take it all in, right? Mm. And then you go to the cafe and you just sit down at a table like a fucking idiot while people bring you food on a plate and you cut it up with your human hands and then eat it. You know, I reckon the cafeteria should just be a big pool that obviously they drain relatively frequently.
Mm.
And then they toss in your burger and chips and you sort of swim through.
They pour a long black into the water that you can kind of gradually absorb into you.
Yeah,
through your gills.
Yeah.
Or at least through your eyes.
Yeah.
The gills are the eyes of the body, aren't they?
The gills are the eyes. You mean the eyes are the gills of the body?
That's what I said.
They don't necessarily help you breathe, but...
No, but they do flap, right?
That's true, they do flap.
And they are kind of moist, like I imagine a gill is, right? And they have, I think, probably like pretty narrow membranes between... We're all about the narrow membranes on this podcast, and the narrow membrane between like the blood supply... You can see the blood vessels in the eye there. I reckon you could breathe through
your
eyes.
Couldn't you just rip open your chest and put some slits in your lungs?
Yeah, yeah.
I reckon that's probably what the gaps between the ribs are for. They're just there for cutting slits in your lungs, and then you become aquatic.
All this time we've been looking at like reams of stamps with those perforations, those gaps between the stamps, and it's never occurred to us that, hey, we've got kind of little gaps between our ribs. What if we can tear along those lines?
And I understand water has oxygen in it anyway, so if you fill the lungs with water... That's a bit of oxygen there.
Surely
anyway.
It must be getting something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this is exactly... Like, this is why you drown, right? Not because your lungs are filled with water, but because there's no way to get the water out of your lungs, I think.
Or it's too late to learn how to get the water out of your lungs.
Yeah, yeah. So really a lot of it is a sort of a culture shock, the shock of the new.
Yeah.
And the stress of learning, which, like, as you get older is very... You know, confronting for a lot of people having to adapt to a new lifestyle and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of people probably just give up because they don't want to change.
That's what 90% of drowning is.
Yeah, when you're younger.
Fear of change.
If you put in the effort when you're younger to chop your lungs open like gills and
correct.
Really like preemptively drown yourself a bit when you're younger.
Yeah, or
just a bit though.
Just to build up an immunity to drowning.
Mm. Well, you know how some people can scull liquids or beer or whatever like that by just opening up their throat?
Mm.
But what if you just learn to open up your esophagus and just let loads of fluid in like that into your lungs? Is it esophagus the air one?
No, that's the water again.
Sorry,
that's the food again.
Sorry, I mean the air esophagus. The air
esophagus?
Air esophagus.
Yeah.
And then you learn to open that one up, let water all the way into your lungs and under control system, maybe near some kind of water breathing sensei, and then they show you how to expel it out, or they tip you upside down or whatever it takes.
I mean, if it takes tipping you upside down, this isn't going to be a sustainable swimming strategy.
I know, but that's how you start. Maybe there's maybe you can just like sort of push your chest in or like flex your pecs or whatever.
Get
like
it out
that.
The pores or something. I like the just a little slit, just a sluice at the bottom there, just sluice it through.
Yeah,
I reckon we could call it the Jack Sluice after
Jack
you.
Jack Sluice.
The Drew Sluice.
The Drew Sluice.
I've always wanted to have a sluice named after me. Always, it's been a real dream of mine. So the water just goes straight through you and you're fine. Is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about...
Because there's like those free divers who can be underwater for an absurd amount of time. And even them...
They're just holding their breath.
Yeah. I feel like that's not the only thing they do. They probably have other jobs and families and things. If you could really commit to whatever they're doing to build up the going underwater that long, if you doubled down on that and that was just your full-time thing, was just being underwater.
Yeah.
Sure, you'd
get there pretty quickly.
Yeah, I guess you could. Because you have to find a way to monetize it unless you're just literally trying to become a sea creature.
Yeah.
Where you just want to keep your mouth open and catch small plankton and things like that. Is that what you're suggesting?
I think that's the dream, if you can survive underwater air-wise, and then I think once you get that down, food. What do whales have? Where some whales have like a sieve in their mouth, and they just plow right through the
baleen.
Baleen, yeah,
yeah.
I think
does it get stuck in their baleen, or does the baleen act as some kind of?
I'll take you through it if you like.
I love that.
So they open the mouth real real wide. They take in all of the krill. Right, and then they close the baleen, leave the lips open. I assume they have lips, and they use the tongue to push all the liquid out through the baleen. So, like a filter, right? And all the little krill gets trapped on the inside, and then they lick it off, suck it down.
But wouldn't it be like sucking it out of a mustache?
But an internal mustache.
Yeah. Well, we've definitely spoken about the internal mustache because that's how we came up with the idea of a reverse Tom Selleck.
Okay.
Do you feel like the krill maybe have a small bit of false hope when they're being pushed out of the mouth? Like they get gobbled up and then the time they're like, oh, it doesn't want to eat us at all. We're free.
Yeah. And then the doors shut. Yeah. I mean, it's very cruel if God has given krill hope.
Yeah.
But, I mean, maybe it needs that because, I mean, I imagine that the baleen isn't a perfect
filter
for stopping all the krill of getting out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? And maybe if you were sort of either God or the process of evolution, it would be maybe important to have krill feel hope so that the ones that did get out could learn something from that and teach the other krill, maybe become some kind of shaman krill.
Create a religion. Yeah.
Create a religion that keeps them away from the surface, and then you get these kind of bottom-dwelling krill that are safe. Safe krill.
That's when you assume that they are safe down there and not near the surface for some reason.
Well, near the surface or wherever. Like, do whales get krill from mostly the surface?
Sort of anywhere in the water column, they can get krill. Wherever krill resides, I picture a whale will get there. They can swim real deep.
I know, but not that deep.
You're right. Not as deep as Al's talking.
Not as where you're imagining krill may or may not be. Not quite that deep.
I'm imagining it just beyond the whale threshold. Yeah. I don't know where you're imagining it. Obviously, you're imagining it within the whale threshold. I'm imagining it without it.
I mean, look, you're being silly, but clearly, clearly I was making an argument so that there was an exception, right? Yeah, this is even the point, right. You know.
Yeah,
even
that it would be reasonable for some krill to have hope of avoiding these whales.
Right.
Well, you know, at least have some hope.
I don't think they need hope, though. I think to do everything you've described, I think all they need is fear, right? Fear of this happening to them again.
I know, but sometimes a near-death experience gives you shamanic ability.
That is definitely true.
And so maybe this little krill or plankton could find other like substances in the water around it and that are psychoactive for krill.
This is really exciting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Maybe like jellyfish fish residue or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know. I'm just saying that there could be some krill that live outside of the boundaries of where whales live. Or, you know, even just hanging out near big rock spikes.
Yeah.
Where whales aren't going to risk scratching their sides.
That's true. And they are a lot like a balloon. And I think if I was a whale, I wouldn't be 100% confident that I couldn't burst.
A balloon whale?
The words are very similar. Do you think burst? I think from the whale point of view, where they work a lot with vowels, they probably would notice that kind of a thing.
It'd be very funny to a whale.
the similarity of bursting?
Well, do you think burst, or they'd get like just a little, you know, like when you release the air on a balloon, it goes and like flies all around the room?
Plankton flying out.
Yeah, all around the Atlantic?
Yeah, yeah, just you see a whale get punctured and then it just kind of flies out of the water and loops around a few times, well, like at a birthday party or something.
Maybe the answer to why they beach themselves.
Yeah.
It seems so illogical. But
to us.
To us, but if they were just sort of, you know, there was the air escaping from them that flung them onto the beach.
But then I think it's the mass beachings then that we can't explain, because surely they're not all
mass scorings.
Yeah, piercing on... spikings. Do we have any? Have we written anything down, Alistair?
I've written breathing through drowning.
I think you could get a. I reckon if you or I or anyone started a Patreon or a Kickstarter, to get us living underwater, because we're talking about how like this has got to be a full time thing. You know, there are people who are like, look, I just want to focus on my art. I don't have time to work and that sort of thing. It's so important. And you know, and if you've got a good following, you've got a good Twitter presence, social media, or whatever, people get on board with that shit, right? And they just donate you like $10, $50 a month, and then you're sweet.
But what do you want? You want just like a, or are you just live streaming it at all times?
I guess you have a GoPro on top of your head or something, and
I feel like I respect just insanely courageous and also vague, impossible goals more than I respect just being a diligent artist. I think if you were, if I was scrolling through Patreons and there's a lot of...
I want to keep making
just artists and filmmakers who are just like, we want $3 a month or whatever to keep doing this, versus just someone who, a very strange person who I have no idea what they're about, and I'm like, we should be able to live in the water... $5 a month.
Yeah.
No questions asked, I'll get it happening.
It would, yeah. And so you just say, I am just going to keep trying until I can absolutely survive on my own, essentially not need your donation. So, but then they have kind of an incentive to not ever be able to live underwater, because...
To keep the donations coming.
Yeah.
Well, I think once you are living underwater, you're probably still going to need donations, I guess... To maintain your website?
I guess for batteries. Somebody's got to keep bringing you batteries.
Batteries for your camera?
For your camera, so that you're live streaming, Patreon only.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, cause, and I guess because you can breathe underwater, you will probably have to just come up every sort of 2-3 hours like a whale. But not for air. You come up for batteries.
For batteries?
Yeah, yeah.
And
to maintain a social media presence. And
yeah.
Probably some of the, I guess the people who are donating to the Patreon themselves can't live under the water. So any of the reward tiers would probably involve you coming up and, you know, like
squirting some water in their face out of your blowhole.
$20 a month, I'll squirt water directly from my blowhole into your face whenever I feel like it. It's not a thing you can plan on. Just surprise you with a blast of water in the face.
Well, I mean, you have some control over it, because presumably it'll only happen when you're by the seashore.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
or in a dinghy.
Okay.
What?
Could, I guess you might be in a dinghy a long way from land, so you're nowhere near the seashore.
Yeah.
Correct, Alistair. Yeah. I mean, the dinghy is a very a shore.
Well, not
proximity.
You know, again, Andy, if I had said it, why would I mean that?
Yeah.
I mean, why would I mean that part that makes it me look stupid?
So you don't mean the bit that makes you look stupid. You mean the bit where you're alone in a dinghy in the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
You don't look stupid.
Yeah. Well, that's not me. That's the person in the idea.
Okay. Whose idea, though?
Eh?
Whose idea?
My good idea.
Yeah. Can't help it. No, she didn't put the word good into that.
I don't know if that was just, wasn't a positive spin. That was just what it was.
Yeah, I think there's like that small window of like uncertainty within a statement. I think both times we filled that gap with you being crazy.
That's
which
fine.
Wasn't we shouldn't
hey,
have done
I don't
that,
think yeah. I'd fill it with being crazy. I think I filled it with you being just a bit uninformed.
Yeah, just
not,
wrong.
Not really knowing much about dinghies.
Well, I want to tell you that I wasn't 100% sure of the context I was suggesting my idea into, but I think I defended myself really well.
Let me tell you, Alistair, the context was a hostile one, yeah. And it will continue to be so until the podcast wraps up when we both die holding hands in episode 200.
Yeah.
Living underwater.
I hope we die podcasting together, by the way.
Yeah, that'd be so good for our family so that they could hear the final moments, find out what...
Can you, we were just talking about this before, can you add that to one of the Patreon tiers? Where it's like yes. You get the side tank and all the different stuff, but then it's $100 a month, you can hear us die together?
Well, I think it would be beautiful. Like in the present day, obituaries are all he died surrounded by friends and family. But I think in the future, it'll be he died surrounded by Patreons.
Yeah.
You know, those
subscribers.
Who, yeah, and subscribers. And
or he died and you can hear it if you add $13 to his Patreon, which will go to his estate.
Yes, which will be spent on maintaining the Patreon. I never want my Patreon to die.
Yeah.
Live on after me.
They say you die twice. Once when you die and once when people finally remember to unsubscribe to their bank details from your Patreon account.
Anyway, yeah. patreon.com/
Think Tank.
Sorry for
bringing... Think Tank? Two in Tank? What is it? Do we know?
Two in Tank.
Great. Mm.
Sorry for bringing the mood down by talking about both of you dying.
Yeah, people unsubscribing from our Patreon. Yeah.
I mean, to be honest, that was the saddest one.
I mean, yeah.
That really made me go deep inside myself.
I feel like this is... Where are we at? Because I was about to launch on a new thing I was thinking about. But
we can always go back. We can go forward.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's non-linear.
It's a sort of a 3D movement thing. It's kind of like living underwater.
Mm. Yeah.
We can go up. We can go down.
Speaking of living underwater.
Yeah.
Because I was just thinking about people living forever, which I don't know as much about science as you guys, but I always hear little things about, altering our DNA, or there's a thing about what is it called, like
zombie cells. You read about zombie cells?
I don't know about zombie cells.
You gotta get rid of them.
You gotta flush out them zombie cells.
That's the new frontier. What's the one you were gonna say?
There's a thing, exit velocity, is that what it's called or something, where it's not escape velocity in regards to health, where it's like we're not immortal, but we're extending the human life by more than a year per year.
Yeah.
Something like that. I thought was very interesting.
Sick.
But what I was thinking about
was... You just have to live long enough for the next revolution in life-lengthening technology.
Yeah, yeah. Which would be very stressful for the scientists, I feel like. Guys, we've got to get another 6 months on this ASAP.
Because the 178-year-olds are banging down my door out there. I mean, not very vigorously. But they're piling up as well. The 177-year-olds are really clogging the car park.
That's a weird one. Because being young in a world where everyone was immortal would be... a lot to take in.
But when you say young, do you mean really? Do you mean young, or do you just mean your body is young, or do you mean you're like...
You're like 7.
Yes.
And your next door neighbor is 200 million years old.
Mm.
What do you talk about? Because I struggle to talk to someone in their 50s.
Yeah.
We have so little in common already.
Someone 2 years older than me.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. It's a lot of like, oh, do you remember this show? It's like, not really. Where if you're talking to like, do you remember the... Did you like the Beatles? It's like, I've been alive since time started. I've seen societies rise and fall.
Did that take place under the yellow sun?
Yeah.
I enjoyed the yellow sun, if that's what you're referring to, but everything else is just a flicker. Passes like
I wonder how full your brain would be after, like, even just 1,000 years where you're like, I'm sorry, I just can't fit anything else in. What was your name? Like that? You know?
Yeah.
Trying to remember, like, back to...
That's the... Because that is a threshold that I guess we haven't met yet, right? Because there are people who are like 120 who are still sharp and whose brains aren't yet like so full of information that they are just totally rendered useless. So there, but there would at some point be a threshold of the amount of information that can be held in the human brain. I mean, I'm not great at remembering things as it is, so I reckon I'd be okay. I just sort of cycle through.
But I wonder if there is a threshold, because isn't it just making connections? Like, I guess there's just always going to be... They're small enough that there's just going to be loads and loads of space forever.
You reckon?
Maybe. I guess at some point there'll be, like, some weird rewiring, like, yeah, some weird...
stuff sort of overlaps or...
But I think that's fine. That's where more creativity will come from.
You reckon those 200,000-year-old people are going to be real creative?
Probably. I mean, or senile.
Yeah.
Similar. I thought of a thing to do with that escape velocity... What, you kind of experience something like escape velocity like that, but when you're eating something that's really delicious, but it's so big, and you're doing it, but you're like, you're so full, but then you feel yourself get a little bit less full, and so then you have another bite, and then but then you have to wait, and you're like, oh, no.
Well, I wonder what would be the, what sort of food you'd have to create to have a low enough density... and a low enough, like, energy content that you can be eating it constantly.
Oh, man.
And, like, you just shit occasionally and piss or whatever, but, like, there's no break between meals.
And there's no break between shits.
Yeah.
It's just a constant shit. A
constant low-key shit.
Yeah.
Love the low key shit. Oh, it's so great. It's wild to think that there could be anything low key about constantly shitting. It's.
Like, they're really proud of it as well.
Oh,
like,
sure.
Do you two go to the toilet before we start or anything? He's like, no, I'm constantly low-key shitting. Don't worry about it. What is this, my own wedding? Don't worry, I don't need to go to the toilet first because I'll be right the whole time.
I will be shitting throughout this.
I'll be shitting and eating. And if I stop shitting or eating at any point, it throws off the balance and I'm fucked after that. But I got...
So first they're creating a product that you can eat at all times, right? So I think there's, like, you know that konjac? Have you ever eaten konjac?
No, what's konjac?
You can get them in the health food section. It's kind of, I don't know what it's made of. I assume it's like a seaweed or something like that. But I tried it first in Taiwan, and it was just a kind of like glutinous, it seems like a jube, and you eat it, and it's... okay, it's kind of nice. It's like a nice texture.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, but it didn't really have much flavor. And then it doesn't really have any calories.
Yeah.
Right? And now they make, like, noodles out of it. So it kind of seems like a kind of like an alternative to, like, pasta or something like that. But it's only got, like, 10 calories per 100 grams or something like that. So it's very low compared to pasta, which is, like,
this could be perfect.
Yeah. Mm. Now... they don't have a lot of flavor, but they do have an interesting texture, almost weird.
I'm not sure that this product we're creating should have an interesting texture. I think it should almost be like a foam that you can squirt into your mouth.
But you're kind of like, it's something that you enjoy eating, though, right? Because that's why you want to be eating it at all times.
I guess so.
Yeah, like I think like eating feels good, and it's a way to do it all the time.
Yeah.
That's not really what my vision was when I suggested this to begin with, guys. But okay.
Yeah, so...
well, I mean, maybe you could have different flavors and that sort of thing. But the point is, you're always just working on something. You got your mouth going, you know. That's
so. Also, yours wasn't for pleasure. It was just so that it's working.
Just something to keep your mouth, fill the time.
Just to keep your mouth busy, so it doesn't like go and spray paint like local municipality buildings or something.
These kids keep it off the streets. Yeah. Keep them busy. They're always
skateboarding and graffitiing.
These
what
mouths.
What about a strange noodle? Or what about a foam that they could constantly be eating?
To keep these mouths. For some reason, when you said a strange, I thought you were about to say an estranged mouth.
What?
Like your mouth has become estranged. No,
that's
from
a great
you?
Idea.
What yeah. about it's a, like a. It's a mayor or a government official of some kind who and their solution for like delinquent youths is a type of foam that they can always be eating and also low-key shitting, as we've discussed.
Well, I think
which will keep them too busy to do any crimes.
Now, this is
crime is down. Crime is down. So my idea seems so great so far. They're always eating and constant low-key shitting.
I mean, there's a lot more shit in the streets.
Yeah. But we can follow the trail and get back to the person who did it.
Yeah.
And then find them.
Didn't clean it up.
It's bringing in money for the company. Then they
the company.
The company, which is the municipality.
Oh, it's a corporation now.
It's been privatized.
Yeah, that was always going to happen. No, this could be a dystopia like, you know, your Brave New Worlds, your 1984s, right? Because they always have some different mechanism.
But it's a Grave New World.
Because things are bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brave New World seemed confusing because it wasn't that brave. It was kind of bad.
It was bad. Brave, they should have called it Grave New World. New World. And I don't know. New World. Grave World?
Grave World?
That would
grave.
Have sounded like Jack Schuster's podcast.
They should have called it Grave Heart because of all the people who died in battle.
That's right. Yeah. And he died.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was going to probably go in a grave. I don't know if they named the title of movies and where the where the person ended at the end of the film.
But this could be another way to control the population, right? If people have to, because there's only just enough energy in this food that you have to be constantly eating it in order to survive, right? And also you're constantly key shitting, right? And if you're constantly eating, you can't talk. Right, so you can't plan a revolution to overthrow the corporation that we've established you're running almost, the local council.
You've almost literally invented sheep.
Yes, yes, yeah, sheeple.
Yeah. Sheeple. So are you inventing grass? Is that the food that we're constantly low-key eating?
Yeah, but it's and a then, foam.
Yeah.
Hey?
But it's a foam.
It's a foam grass.
It's on the ground, so you've got to be down on all fours chewing it up off the ground. So you can't even really see where all the important buildings are to plan your revolution.
So is the foam instead of like a, like just like a squirty bottle?
No, it's on the ground. It comes out of holes.
No.
It comes up out of holes in the ground. You got to crawl around to eat it.
It's one of those schemes that's so, it's so good once it's in place, but at the early stages, it's before people are hooked on the stuff, it's just a lot of foam holes.
Sure. It's like electric cars. You know, you got to get the charging stations out there. Yeah. You've got to get the economies of scale and the network effect. And
there's got to be a good short distance between the foam fountains so that, I mean, or foam holes, I apologize. Yeah. I don't mean to rebrand it already.
I'm very much on pushing for my original ideas on this episode of the book.
It doesn't matter.
Where the riff goes or what's funny, what I was trying to tell you guys.
Is what I thought initially.
Yeah. Or came up with since then. I'm not open to suggestions.
So either, okay, we could just write municipality.
No. Yeah, municipality. That's the key word in this whole thing, Alistair. Good. A big, long word like municipality.
How is this a sketch? I mean, it's the best idea I've ever heard in my life, but how is it a...
Well, it could be this municipality trying to exert control over their people.
Yeah.
And so... luckily, the council that is part of the municipality, there's the mayor.
Yeah.
And then there's his right-hand man, who's the head of the council. And then there's his...
Very often the mayor, but not in this case.
I know, but this is like, you know, like the sort of deputy.
This is a Grave New World.
Oh, sorry. They've even restructured local government.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's the left-hand woman.
Ah.
And she's a food scientist.
Yes.
But she's also on the council.
And she also is a big fan of holes in the ground.
That's right, yeah. And she's also a geologist.
Yes.
And so, and then together they develop a new way of controlling the city.
Yeah.
The municipality.
You know, There's a lot of protest, but they have the numbers on the council, and so they push it through.
They push it through.
And then they roll it out.
And then people actually are like quite big fans of the foam.
Mm. Mm. Well, it's got a pleasing flavor. It can be pleasing.
Yeah, and I think so much of my brain is taking up with what I want to eat and when.
Mm.
That if that part of my, if some people wear the same clothes every day, like Steve Jobs or whatever, if I was just eating a foam constantly.
Yeah, and I guess the way that they can also sell it to people is that you don't have to pay for food ever again. Which, of course, some of the, you know...
Is the price of the foam absorbed in your taxes in this municipality?
I think you're paying for it with your rates and with your fines, if your parking tickets and different things like that.
It does feel like the kind of thing that people would eventually come around to expecting their council to do for them, right? Because we expect the council to maintain the roads. We expect the council to take away the garbage, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that far away. You know, they've also got to look after schools and stuff like that. Eventually we're going to expect them to just have food coming out of the ground.
Holes of edible foam that we can climb into. And,
you just kind of grab a couple of handfuls.
Scoop some up.
And start eating
as you're walking
until you
along.
Get to the next foam hole.
Yeah.
And then as long as
we have water fountains as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we're a foam hole. There's a water fountain, there's a foam hole.
You know when you're low key shitting, probably look like an aero bar. Cuz it's
aero bar. Now which one's the aero bar?
It's the one with all the bubbles in it that looks like it's got
made of
foam.
But are they green? Are they green bubbles in aero bars?
Peppermint aero, sure.
Peppermint aero.
You're thinking of peppermint aero.
Yeah, no, so it's not that.
Well, it depends if you were eating peppermint foam.
Yeah.
What flavor foam
region.
Fuck, the balls on the aero bar people to be like, our selling point is that it's mostly air and we don't give a shit. We're not trying to trick anyone into thinking that it's going to be good value and they'll get chocolate in it. It's mostly air and bubbles. The cheapest thing for a factory to put into chocolate.
Air and bubbles.
Yeah, air and bubbles.
Do you think there was a debate in the boardroom between the guy who wanted to call it Aero and the guy who wanted to call it Chocolate-O?
Yeah. People don't want chocolate, they want air.
Yeah, you need air to survive.
But then also I think they spelt it like aero, as in...
Aeroplane.
Like aeroplane.
Oh, right.
As in, it's maybe some kind... Like, is it... What's the flying word?
Aeronautical?
Aerodynamically designed?
Could be, but I don't know that it looks that way to me particularly. And it does seem to be mostly full of bubble.
I know,
air.
But it does have like, you know, those kind of like, you know, it's got a smooth ending.
It's got like, it comes in like individual chunks that kind of like rivets that could have some kind of
maybe lift.
I bet that air inside the bubbles tastes like chocolate. Like there'd be no way that you could ever taste it separate to the chocolate surrounding it. So this is going to have to remain a theory.
Yeah.
But I reckon the air in the bubbles is pretty chocolatey air.
If you got like a syringe and put that into the bubble of an aero bar and took a little bit out and then...
Like a biopsy kind
of... Yeah, and then injected that into your own bloodstream, would you feel cool?
Yeah, you'd get it.
You'd feel cool. Yeah. You'd feel pretty cool.
I reckon you'd get the chocolate bends.
Yeah.
You can't taste things through your bloodstream, but
you could inject it into your mouth, maybe
into your mouth,
which I think is what he was purposefully avoiding.
Yeah,
could you inject it straight into a taste bud or something though? Right, like can you get things more into your taste bud than just by absorbing them through the surface of the taste bud?
Could you extract all the air somehow if you like? I don't know, if you put it in like a sealed thing
and melted
like,
it?
Melted it down and then
I reckon,
like smushed the air down or something?
Yes.
Wait, so wait, like evacuate the tube. Like evacuate the thing with the aero bubble.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
With the aero.
And then melt it.
And yeah.
Oh, but then
or you
but then
just
you
break
might just
it.
Get evaporation of aero bar.
Yeah, because what if you get all the air out of there?
Yes.
Okay, so you evacuate it. So now it's just aero in a low pressure tube.
Yep.
Like that. And then you shake it so that it's banging against the wall and then you're getting
cracks.
You're essentially coal, what's that, seam gas?
Fracking.
You're essentially fracking the chocolate air out of there, and then you extract it from the top into some test tube, and then you suck on the test tube.
Yeah, and I bet that would be low calories, you know?
Yeah, with like, a good chocolatey taste.
It's a great way to get the aero experience. Mm. Really, the defining feature of the aero experience, the air.
Just the air.
Yeah.
And then you're leaving all
none
the
of
O.
None of
the
O.
The O just O.
remains in the bottle.
Yeah. In some dump site for scientific waste.
That's right. Yeah, you throw it in there. It's just
throw it in the trash.
You know, some thousands of years from now, some guy will be sifting through garbage and they'll be like looking at, you know, the traces of our civilization, and they'll open it up and they'll go, "What's in here?" And they'll open and go like that. As he goes, "Whoa, weird! It's like just sucked air into this thing because it was such a low pressure system." And he opens it up and then he looks inside and it's just a crushed up air. It's just a crushed up O,
pure O. Yeah.
And they'll look back on today and think, "Truly, we were as gods."
I assume so.
Mm. Is that? Is there? I wonder if they've done it with those bubbles in there, so that they can then have a lower like calorie count on the bar or something, and then but it still looks like a big bar, but like it doesn't have as much actual stuff in it, so it feels healthy even though it's just full of air.
Yeah.
Well, I think that they've done that to a certain extent, just so that they can save money on chocolate.
Oh, that's also a much more likely logic.
But where they've stabbed themselves in the foot. Is that what you do? Stab yourself in the foot?
Yeah.
I think you shoot yourself in the foot.
But you can stab yourself, sure. Yeah,
you can drop a knife.
It's a free country.
That's what they used to say before guns, I would imagine.
Of course, when you sit a... what's the part that you put at the end of a gun there with the...
Bayonet?
No, it's when you bayonet yourself in the foot.
Yeah, but before they had knives, they would have had to say something like, you've strangled your own foot to death.
Yeah. You've whacked your foot with a... Bronze Age axe.
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. Which is what we call the present.
Yeah. Yeah. And because now they can't create a light aero bar.
Right. You know they've left themselves nowhere to go because it's already very light.
I mean, they started out by making the most affordable bar and now they can't. What are they going to put in more air?
If the air in an aero bar was not air but helium, do you think it could just float, or at least float longer than normal?
I would absolutely. Like, if you could get me a chocolate that was like a Kinder Surprise or something, and inside is helium, and it floats around the room, right? And then I can chomp it out of the air, you absolutely have my attention. This is back to, like, being like a fish, right?
Because the food. Yeah.
Okay, because I reckon it was impractical what we were talking about before, about living as a fish man underwater.
What?
Yeah. No, Alistair, I'm calling it now. In hindsight, with the benefit of hindsight, which is 2020, that was a crazy idea. But this one, where we just have bigger, hollower foods with helium inside that float around and we can wade through a school of them and chomp them out of the air, that is absolutely going to work, right? We need to develop a chocolate shell, which is lightweight yet strong enough to be able to maintain its form and contain that helium.
Mm-hmm.
You bite it, and then you'll have a squeaky voice. It'll be fantastic.
It'll be like eating in space.
Yes.
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
And so you go into there. It's a big white room. Mm-hmm. The waiter brings you in your meal.
Like space.
Like that.
All of this is exactly like.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Space.
Just like space. Okay, well they can open up a metal tray thing and then just throw it in.
Yeah, like space.
Like in space.
This is even more like space than that other description.
And then it's all foods that you can have helium. So like profiteroles.
Yes.
Oh my god. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you, you're running around, you and your friend, it's a date, you know, you guys are jumping up and down trying to catch profiterole rolls in your mouth. It's the most fun you've ever had.
What else? Croissant? Do you reckon we could get a croissant?
Yeah, I think we could definitely try.
Good. I mean, Maltesers, I think you could do.
Absolutely, a Malteser, yeah.
Could you fill a snow pea with helium?
I reckon there's a lot of space in there. It wouldn't look like a snow pea anymore. It would look like a sugar snap pea.
Yeah, that's right. And that's another surprise that you'd get.
Ah, double surprise. Yeah. What was the first surprise?
That there was a floating snow pea.
Floating sugar snap pea.
Yeah.
No, well, then the first surprise is that it's a snow pea.
No, how's that? No, because that can't be the first surprise. That's got to be the second surprise. If we're ranking the surprises, the first surprise is a floating sugar snap pea.
Is floating food.
Yes. Second surprise, wow, that wasn't the type of pea I expected. Yeah. Okay.
And then what's the third surprise then?
The third surprise is they reunite you with your...
it costs $50,000.
Thank you. With your lack of $50,000.
Yeah, right. Mm. I think they would have to put in the snow pea, they'd have to put like some kind of a sealant so that when you inject like the little metal rod that injects the helium into there, there would have to be a fluid in there that then blocks the hole from the inside.
Mm.
Now, I think I've heard that you can do that in a radiator, if you get a hole in your radiator, by cracking an egg in there.
Great.
Like that. So maybe you could just put a little bit of egg in there.
Yeah.
And then it seals up the hole, and that way your snow pea can float.
Now, this cracking an egg idea, who told you this?
I think I saw it on Mythbusters.
And did it work?
I can't remember.
But that's crucial.
Surely it working or not working would be that a radiator is hot and cooks the egg, which makes it firmer than it is when it's
running. So this
running.
Has to be a real hot...
It's
going to
be a snow pea that's the heat of a radiator.
It could be. Like, it's a floating food restaurant, but it's a Bikram floating food restaurant.
Yeah. It's real hot. Or, like we're trying to find cold fusion, to do fusion at room temperature, nuclear fusion.
Just to fuse
maybe
eggs.
We need to research a way to do cold cooked eggs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That cold could be the next thing. Once they've sorted out cold fusion, let's look at a cold cooking.
Feels like you could just add a chemical to eggs and it should change.
Probably. Vinegar?
Eh?
Vinegar? Do you reckon it's vinegar?
No, because you cook eggs in vinegar when you're poaching them, and then when you put them in, they don't immediately get cooked.
Not using enough vinegar.
That's possible. More vinegar. I mean, I know that they use lime to cook fish in South America.
See? Really? I reckon.
But I don't think it gets really cooked. I think it gets chemically treated in some way.
Well, it's never going to be really cooked if you're just doing it with the chemical analyst here.
Well, then that's not why. Then I don't want that. I want it to be really cooked, but at room temperature.
But with a chemical. But?
Yeah.
But it's really cooked.
But it could be an endothermic reaction. Which is a hot reaction.
Yes, it is. Yes. Or is that an exothermic reaction?
Probably exo.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Wait, okay. We didn't think of other foods that could float.
I reckon peanuts still in the shell. Injecting them.
I think that's too... I don't think there's enough space to get enough helium in there to make that float.
I feel like peanut shells are... If you think of just a peanut that you eat versus one when it's got that big, like, woody... shell. I feel like they're not efficient at all in how they're maintaining the individual nuts. I feel like there's a bit of room.
No, there's definitely rattle room. You're right. But and that shell is quite light, isn't it? Like it's always very, you know.
Because like you could make model planes out of peanut shell wood. Balsa, is that what balsa wood is?
Yeah, it's peanut shell.
Peanut shells, just crushed peanut shell. You could engineer a peanut that's got enough space in there. Just has a tiny nut, but big air. Like, it just looks like one of the Montgolfiers hot air balloons.
Mm.
You know those guys, the Montgolfiers?
The Montgolfier brothers.
I think they're the people who invented the hot air balloon.
Oh,
so that's why the French word for hot air balloon, I think, is just a Montgolfier.
Really?
I think so. I can't remember.
And also, I guess, pufferfish, right?
Pufferfish.
Although you probably wouldn't be able to, like, eat them, chomp them, but you could put the air into them, they're floating around the room and it'll... contribute to the experience of what it's like to be a fish.
Mm, I think it's also you can only eat a very small part of those.
Right.
The Simpsons episode has taught me anything. Well, so
there's like those top Japanese chefs that are the few that know how to prepare. And even amongst them, there's even a smaller portion that know how to prepare the pufferfish while it's floating above them.
Mm.
And I think that's what's going to be so good about this restaurant. It's going to be one of those ones where they cook in front of you.
Yeah.
Like that. But with the hot, then there's hot plates all over the place. The walls is all hot plates.
Right, great.
Like that.
And so the roof is a hot plate. That's why it's so hot in there. That's why the egg cooks in the shell.
Yeah, yeah.
In the pea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the shell of the pea.
Yeah. I mean, that's rock solid. That idea checks out on
Helium Foods restaurant.
I think if you did that, they would make an episode of Chef's Table about you.
I fucking like hope nice so. I mean, what does it take to get an episode of Chef's Table?
Yeah.
I've got Hovering Foods here.
I reckon you could make the worst quality food of any episode of Chef's Table and they'd still give you one. You wouldn't need to try hard at all.
Well, even if you could do it, you know, like chips. You know, like chips sometimes have that bubble in them. You know, you something you buy chips and then you go, hey, wait, this chip bubbled. Like that.
What sort of chip do you mean?
Oh, you mean crisps.
Crisps, yeah.
Yeah, great.
Like a regular chip.
Oh, yeah,
yes. Like
that. You know, they get that bubble in them. Well, if you could engineer for them all to be bubble chips, then you could just go there just to eat chips. He goes, oh, it's just a chip restaurant. And then they can just sprinkle powder on it because that's not heavy.
Yes.
You know?
So they're floating around?
They're floating around. You go in. Here you go. Here's two bags of chips. You and your date go around. You eat chips out of the air.
So you open the bag. All the chips float out.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fantastic.
You know? And you've had a really fun time. You're both like, you're somewhere between a bird and a fish.
Yeah.
You know? You guys could dress as whatever you want. Bird or fish. With that, there's step ladders all over the place in case some of the chips get stuck on the roof.
The ground's really soft, so if you jump off a ladder thinking you can fly, because it's so immersive, the experience.
Yeah.
People forget, right? But they'll be fine. They don't hurt themselves when they hit the ground.
That's right, yeah. So it's like a kid's playground, but
and your voice will be so high-pitched, you probably sound like a bird as well from all the helium.
Yeah, or a fish.
Or your burps will be so high-pitched. I'm not sure if a stomach full of helium has the same effect as a lung full of helium. Something that science could perhaps look into for us.
Well, they'll have to.
Yeah, or they won't have to. We'll work it out. Food will look into it for us. Science can take the day off because cuisine is here. Oh, how great would it be if a chef got a Nobel Prize for science?
That'd show those goddamn physicists.
Nerds who don't know how to make any food.
God,
I hate them.
Scientists winding up with the science awards.
And imagine if he or she got it for just roasting a chicken.
So well, though.
Yeah.
Mate, okay. Yeah, sure. It could be that.
Like, would it be that? I guess it would have to be then the Nobel Prize for chemistry, right? Because flavor is chemistry, and if you make the most delicious thing.
But cooking is physics.
Cooking is physics, you're right. They could get chicken, both. They could scoop the field.
But then chicken is biology.
Yes, and the temperature on the oven is maths. So that's a Fields Prize. Fields Medal. And the menu is literature.
Yes, I was trying so hard to get to literature, and I forgot about menus.
And Bob Dylan will be there, and he's already got a Nobel Prize.
Yes, and a slice of chicken or a leg of chicken is a piece, or a piece of chicken.
Yeah.
Oh. What do they call it? Is there a piece thing? Something.
It's a piece of chicken, and they could give it to a warring nation. And that'll maybe bring peace upon them.
No, I think if they only give them one piece of chicken, it would be a struggle.
Well, it depends.
How good the chicken is.
Exactly.
They'd have to put one piece on the border.
Border chicken.
And
I'm sorry, Jack, about what we're doing.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I feel like I should be saying more funny stuff.
That's
if anything.
Jack,
we had a conversation, Alistair and I, privately, and
just then while we were yelling things about chicken.
yeah.
And we were with our eyes. And Andy, I need to speak with you over here. Yell some things about chicken.
Okay, so the people are on their way to give out the Nobel Prize for Chemistry, right? And they have the envelope that has the name of Professor Claude Robin Ford, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Professor Claude Robin Ford, who discovered a class of amino acids.
Okay.
Right? And his name is in the envelope. But on the way to the podium, they have a vol-au-vent from a tray that's going around, and it's so delicious that they just on the spot agree that whoever made that deserves it more than this stupid amino acid discovery.
Yeah.
Right? Boring. They throw away the envelope on the podium, and they announce it, and everyone who's had the vol-au-vent cheers. Right? Because they agree.
Yeah.
Right? I was going to come up here tonight and I was going to give the Nobel Prize for Chemistry to some fruity professor with his la-di-da ideas about molecules that we can't even see. And then I had one of those soft shell crab little patties.
Vol-au-vents
going around. You all tried them.
That you can see
and taste. And do they taste good? Am I right? And everyone cheers and agrees. And they,
I feel like afterwards, sort of when they all come to their senses and when the award ceremony.
When the vol-au-vent wears off.
When the ceremony's over and then they're, you know, they kind of have to face these journalists that are like, what happened in the scientific community, things like that, that sort of, I think there'd be backlash.
No, but I think if you've got all the most eminent scientists in the world are there, right? They're all trying the vol-au-vent. I mean, science is built on peer review. You couldn't have a better peer review than all the Nobel Prize winning scientists all trying the same vol-au-vent and all agreeing that they're divine.
Yeah, but I'm sure someone would say that it wasn't chemistry.
Cooking is chemistry. Cookies, it's all chemicals.
Well, I like that this sketch has no conflict whatsoever. That's what's good about it.
All the scientists agree. It's fine. The journalists are like, good call. The person who did invent the molecules was like, well, I didn't have these vol-au-vents myself, but I can imagine there would have been
allergic to crab. Yeah. But it's hard to
disagree with so many scientists. Yeah, yeah.
Could there be something in like there being a Nobel Prize, but they open it up to, you know how I feel like people, whatever their interest is, like it doesn't matter what they're doing, could be anything, but if they're sort of a bit good at it or they take it seriously, they say that it's like a science.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Or like for me, you know, jiu-jitsu is like a science.
Yeah.
And then so then now there's just a Nobel Prize for jiu-jitsu or bird watching or anything where you get good enough that you describe it as a science.
Parking. Love.
That thing where the company is like ranked number one on Google searches.
SEO.
Yeah.
That's like science to people. Optimization. Yeah.
Yeah. And so wait, so then somebody just says, I mean, it's really more of a science to me, like that. And then it becomes a science. And then Nobel.
Oh, really? A science?
Yeah.
Well, and then they just open a branch to it, and then they add a category to their.
Yeah.
And this must happen the same night that people have had these vol-au-vents.
Yeah.
Which I'm starting to think have been laced with something more than just soft shell crab. And
the crab, it was really off crab meat, and it caused some kind of delusion.
I mean, this is what's great, is that what's
happened...
There
were so many heavy metals in the...
There was heavy metals and a large dose of DMT and LSD. Yeah. And
who's to say? Who's to say what had the most effect?
But because the world's most prominent scientists were there at the time... And they all manage to agree on something.
Mm.
That makes that thing true.
Yeah. I think that's how science works. Right?
Well, because all the other scientists that weren't there and also can't disprove this claim.
Again, science.
Science. because the thing is past and obviously there were no vol-au-vents left or, you know.
Oh, believe me, no leftovers. They were. That's how good they were. In fact, that's additional evidence, I think, if any were needed.
That they were...
Yeah.
The very fact that you can't disprove it is proof.
And then the whole Nobel institution is now overloaded with the new categories that they've all agreed upon during the... For me, scuba diving is really more of a science. Yeah. It is! And they're writing it down, and all the people, the officials, are making it official.
They're printing out more Nobel Prizes just on the printer, and they're just coming out little certificates now. Everyone gets a little ribbon. Yeah. They had just one wild night at the Nobel thing. They woke up in the morning and there was a category for everything. And I guess the way things work, they probably can't get rid of the categories as well once they've made them.
Well, then one of the guys starts getting a Nobel Prize for coming up with Nobel categories.
Mm, there should be a prize for that. Mm. There
it's
is.
More of a science.
I think people, yeah. No, that's great, Al. That's great. Have we got three words from a listener?
You know what? We do.
Oh, I'm so happy.
Jack. Today's listener, who's contributed on Patreon.
Yeah.
Do you want to guess what their name is?
Jeff Foxworthy.
That's really close.
Is it Jack Drews?
No, it's Andrew Wright.
Andrew Wright.
Yeah, I think you did really good.
Sorry, I was hoping it was Jeff Foxworthy. But
Jeff wasn't a man's name.
Yeah.
And Wright...
Is a sort of a compliment or a state of being, much like being worthy of foxes.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And it's spelt right, kind of like the Wright brothers.
Mm.
And they were the first to fly a plane, which they did in a field, which had foxes in it. And they were worthy.
That worked perfectly.
I know. And
that was so close.
It was like watching Leonardo DiCaprio play Leonardo da Vinci in a really well-made film about his process.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, the three words that we have for today are telephone, train, and hold up.
Telephone, train, hold up. Is telephone, train, is that like a phenomenon, like thing where you like, is this person sending us a pun? Is a telephone train where you've got to like call, like say you've got to get everyone down to the old mill, like you're all members of the Country Fire Authority and the old mill's on fire and you have a telephone train where you're like, you call one person, they call the next
telephone
person.
Telephone tree.
Telephone tree, sure.
We've all gotten trains and trees confused in our time.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I never again for me.
But telephone train could be where you want to talk to somebody and then you get on a train.
Yes.
And then when you arrive at their house, the train in many ways acted as a telephone.
Right. I mean, a telephone, it could also be an old form of communication that predated the telephone, but they did have the train, right? And what you would do is you would hire really, really talented vocal impersonators, and you would just say a single word to them, and they would leap on a train and go to Manchester, right? And say the word to the person you're in a conversation with, and they would say a word back to the impersonator. They'd come back from Manchester down to Hartlepool, and say their word back to you, and it would be like you were having a conversation, except one where people only seem to say one word at a time. Sentences. A sentence.
Who is the person impersonating?
Each member of the conversation. Each person. You know, you're talking to your friend in Manchester. You're in Hartlepool. You're having a verbal conversation. Right, but instead of going through the medium of a wire, which then uses some magical force to replicate the voice out of a little box, makes me feel very uncomfortable. We're doing it a good old-fashioned way with a man doing the voices.
It's like instead of a electrical signal, it's just a man with a terrible job who has to travel across the country to...
That's right. And so it's kind of like one of those chess games where you play over the mail.
Yeah, but a conversation and
Could it be the conversation that you're having while you're playing a game of chess over the mail?
Could be. Might be a bit of a boring conversation.
Well, I mean, you can talk about other things while you're talking. Oh, that's true. You don't have to talk about chess.
Right. Mm. And does the person do the chess movements as well for you? Is that a separate person?
I mean, they could wait for the letter to come in.
That's true.
Because I guess or they could bring the letter with them.
Mm. I saw a TV show once, and I think about this all the time. I'm so angry about it. There was where the character in it was involved in a game of chess with someone, and he didn't know who the person was, and just every now and then little bits or signals or stuff would just appear around his house. Like the person was kind of stalking them a bit, and there'd be like a signal, so it would be like, you know, queen moves to e7 or whatever, and they'd walk over to the board and move where this mysterious person was communicating the moves to be. But the person who the story was focusing on, who was receiving these messages in the chess game, he was the white pieces, and white moves first, which means he's moved one piece with the anticipation of being terrorized by a chess psychopath. And it did, and it bugs me to this day.
Oh, Jack, that is the most incredible. That you saw that. Yeah, wow.
I don't remember what the TV show was, but I remember that happening.
You could do that. You could do that with your life and just kind of look for signals somewhere.
Yeah.
Like just kind of go, I'm going to start a game of ghost chess.
Yeah.
And then you could move the white piece, and then I'm going to let God, you know, or a ghost give me signals. And then you just have to, however you read the signals, that's where the pieces go. You go.
What you're describing, though, is such a great little tidbit or like little clue that would play out in a Sherlock Holmes mystery or something like that. Like the fact that whoever moved first. I mean, yeah, I love it. I love it. Little tidbit, little clue. I wonder, just to go back briefly to my crazy impersonator
my,
on the train.
My trouble is that we're finding it a little bit boring. So we got to find a way of livening it
up.
Sure,
Alistair. Okay, sure. I'm sorry you're finding it boring. I'm sorry.
No.
But all I'm saying is, and I think it's fun, by the way. I think it's so fun. Yeah. I'm having a great time.
Oh, well, you can tell because you're saying that it's fun.
but it is also that conversation that you have while you're having that chess game over the mail.
Definitely spiced it up with that chess game.
Yeah, sure. is like what they have now, where people are online playing Fortnite or whatever.
Mm.
I've never played a game online, so I don't know. But isn't everyone always just like talking the most obscene, disgusting stuff to each other and like making each other want to commit suicide and that sort of thing in the chat that they have on those games?
There's a bit of that, yeah.
Yeah, I just think like a bit of that real toxic male chess culture could be interesting.
Because I think a lot of the things in the world right now is that people are being so horrible to each other where they kind of, in a way, they couldn't because you were less anonymous in the past.
Mm.
When now it's like you're totally anonymous. You can really go real out there with how fucked you are as a person, you know?
Sure.
So this is like an early pre-technology just in chess matches where people wanted to get their horribleness of their personality and talk shit to each other that they couldn't do in a face-to-face chess match.
Yes. But
does that mean that you have to just send your guy out, your impersonator out, to find somebody who will play long distance chess with you and take your
and
abuse?
Who doesn't know who you are.
Anonymously, yeah. I suppose.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
So somebody who's lonely enough, who wants, you know, who needs a friend and, who's willing to play a really long-term piece of a game of chess... Mm. And has the bench space for just having a game of chess on the go for the next 6 to 7 months.
Yeah, waiting for somebody to show up on the train and yell abuse at them and then make a single chess move and then wait maybe several weeks again before it happens once
Well, that's
more.
Right. So they also have to not be fragile that, you know, that they'll, you know, that they'll retreat back to their loneliness where they were probably quite comfortable.
And they have to have a lot of free time so that they have to be by the chessboard or whatever, and they're not going to miss this person who presumably wouldn't want to show up and then have to wait around for several days stewing on the abuse that they're supposed to deliver.
But then again, you know, sitting around stewing might be a nice break from all that traveling.
All the travel.
All those train journeys they're taking.
You could, another way to do, to create this kind of effect would be some kind of ye olde sort of box that you would go and sit in. Maybe there'd be a curtain drawn across the chessboard, or it would be darkened in some way, and you could just sort of abuse the people that you're playing against. But I guess playing chess in a dark, not being able to see the pieces, would be pretty
difficult. I mean, I guess just trying to find old-timey forms of ways of anonymously abusing people is kind of a fun thing. Maybe just you used to go to tar pits and cover yourself in tar and walk around and sort of just abuse each other, but because of the tar you can't move super fast and hurt each other.
Yeah. Well, tar was in some ways like a technology just like the internet that was discovered and was quite useful, and then, you know, as with any technology, people find a way to use it to harass and to hurt. And, you know, amongst them would be the people who cover themselves in tar and then use the veil of anonymity that tar offers to cyberbully teens.
You're sitting in your house minding your own business, doing your homework as a teenager.
Yeah.
And a man covered head to toe in tar lumbers up to your house, after, like crawling from a tar pit.
It's like, hey. Tar is pretty hot as well, isn't it? Like
cooking and
screaming.
Yeah. Gets the window.
Hey, weakling.
Hey, fuck you. Yeah. And then presumably runs back to the tar pit.
Or runs to go grab a shower.
Yeah.
The child, of course, is so caught up in this, doesn't tell their parents, and nobody knows what they're going through with this sort of online. Online's not the right word, but whatever it was of the time, experience that's so traumatic. I guess the suit of armor, you know, on the battlefield would have offered a similar kind of a thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and what,
they never talk about the verbal bullying in those sword fights.
And how toxic some medieval battles were.
Yeah.
Because of the anonymity, which gave them that bravery that they needed to say really, really quite hurtful things that they would never have said face to face.
It's amazing the hurtful things you can say while you're sort of cutting into somebody's abdomen with your battle axe.
If anything, it was the harsh words he delivered that hurt the most.
Is what he would have said if you had had a chance to interview him as he was last few lumens of light left in his eyes.
Yeah, this would be a great scene to go in the movie Graveheart.
Yeah.
I think we haven't, guys. Would you like me to run you through these sketch ideas?
Alistair, I'd like you to run me through.
Breathing through drowning. Now, this is a complicated one.
What are we going to call it? Browning?
We could call it Browning.
We don't have to spend too much time on this, but ants would hate that.
You think ants would hate that?
Yeah, ants, I think, are... They're drawn to water, are they not?
They are drawn to water. I think they like water, yeah.
Yeah.
But then, unless they're those fire ants, a lot of them can still drown, right?
Yeah, I guess maybe they
But ants don't have lungs, I don't believe, right? Don't they, like most insects, breathe through tiny little holes in their skin?
I'm not sure, but yeah, maybe the idea of all this lung talk would infuriate them.
Yeah, I think they would probably think that we were squandering quite perfectly good lungs.
Yeah,
by treating them. By
adding a druce sluice to the bottom.
Yeah. The druce sluice. The spruce sluice.
Yeah, the druce spluice. Anyway, it's because it's, you know, most of drowning is just the fear of change.
This is every time I have to name a comedy festival show. It's just everyone going, this druce sluice boost, boost moose,
druce
sluice goose.
The druice sluice. I think the druice sluice is just picked it for you.
Yeah.
So you can get oxygen in your lungs through swallowing into your lungs loads of water, but but you need loads. So that's why you got to create a sluice down the bottom and push loads and loads of water through, like you're like a sort of like
you're a jet ski.
A shark whale or a jet ski. Shark whale or whale shark?
Whale shark. Ski jet or jet ski?
Ski jet.
Ski jet, yeah.
Yeah. No, those are the jets that you put on a regular set of skis to make you go super fast.
Yeah, cool.
And win the competition.
You won the competition?
Well, you know, with your jets, ski jets. Then there's the person who sets up the Patreon so that they can live underwater.
Yeah.
Effectively, they're kind of like one of these people who it's like a digital nomad that just can work from anywhere, and they don't have to pay rent because they don't live anywhere. They live in their van or whatever like that. But this is a person who's found a way of getting away from rent costs, food costs, and everything like that by just living fully underwater, but then just makes a little money on the side by webcamming everything, that their life underwater, and then
Sometimes blasting water right into someone's face.
Yeah, when a Patreon near supporter.
The seaside.
Yeah, near the seaside or near a dinghy.
Yeah.
That it could be somewhere out in the middle of the ocean.
Oh, yeah, great.
International waters.
Sounds unsafe,
waters.
But anyway. Yeah. Maybe they got washed out there.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a larger boat that had dinghies on it for side trips.
Yeah, indeed.
Side trips to just like a different bit of the ocean.
Of the ocean. Yeah.
Different bits of the middle of the ocean.
That are also very close to the main boat as well.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's also okay to just go on long trips in a dinghy.
It's not okay to do that, Alistair. It's really irresponsible of you to put that kind of message out there on a platform like this podcast. You don't realize how many kids look up to you.
I want anybody who's listening, especially if you're really young and impressionable, to know that it is fine to just fill up your dinghy with petrol and
go out. You don't even have to fill it up.
You don't even have to fill it up. Just go out as far as you can.
Not even the motor. We're talking the dinghy full of petrol.
And just row. You could just row your boat.
And gently straight into the center of the ocean.
Into the center of the ocean. And that is fine. And do it.
Fuck. I hope this doesn't come back to get us in any way.
Send me a selfie.
The center of the ocean. Big thumbs up.
Big thumbs up.
I did it, Al. Now what?
Okay, now come back.
Get safely.
Come back
or
safely.
Or I'm in trouble.
Then we got constant eating, constant low-key shitting. That's our product that gets invented by the people who run the municipality so that they can control the populace and stop. Crime goes down. There's no more loitering outside of shopping centers. people are just in a constant state of eating because it's nice. Mm. But it's foam coming out of holes.
Yeah.
And people are just walking from hole to hole on their way to work.
Do you think this is a metaphor for social media or checking your phone or something like that?
No. It's a metaphor for going from hole to hole and eating foam.
Yeah, okay, great.
And then having a constant long shit that just never stops. that
stream.
That wouldn't be that different from an aero bar.
It's true.
Stream. It would look like a sort of a factory that made ravioli.
Oh.
They're all connected.
Is that ravioli? Is it?
Ravioli are connected when you make them.
Oh, I guess they must be. I think all pasta probably is connected when you make it, isn't it?
Not all of it.
Oh, good.
There's some bits that you drop in the bowl.
But not ravioli.
Helian Foods restaurant. Best dining experience of your life. Going to get on that show.
Yeah. You feel somewhere between a bird and a fish is the main selling point.
Bird and a fish.
Yeah, I imagined when you're talking about that, I was imagining you with like one of those sandwich boards, like spruiking on the street. It's like, get in here. You feel somewhere between a bird and a fish.
And we always bring it back to Hessen Blumenthal, but he's always making foods look like other foods. He's never making you feel like a different animal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. Oh, that'd be great, though, if he did that. If he, like...
Oh, it'd be so good.
Even if it was just, like, a plate of bird seed, and you had to eat it like a bird, like that, like, by pecking at the plate.
Does he dress you up in a big bird costume?
Yeah, he gets you a big beak. And then at the end, you can eat the beak.
And it was actually, you can eat the beak. Was it marzipan?
It was a marzipan.
The waiters are constantly shooing you out to the restaurant, and you're like, "Well, this doesn't feel right."
So you've got to duck in when the sliding automatic doors are open, peck a few things off a coffee table there.
There's giant people eating at giant tables, and you're eating scraps underneath.
You're scurrying amongst it like a sparrow.
And the waiters are dressed as cats.
Yeah.
And they're killing a lot of your friends.
Yeah, a lot of people.
So it's like somewhere between being a bird and kind of like paintball.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people are dying around you and things like that. And people love paintball. People love fun dining experiences and birds.
It's perfect.
Nobel Prize for chicken or vol-au-vents. And this is essentially, we've discovered that there's been drugs in the in the thing.
Great.
But because whatever...
They had scientific consensus.
Because all the major scientists were... and people of literature, of influence in literature, and
Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan was there, and he's writing a song about it,
and it's so persuasive.
It's so persuasive, and it's motivating a generation of people for a revolution. And
the real peak times in Bob Dylan's career was sort of like '60s revolutionary songs, and then when he ate some weird crab meat in 2018.
In 2018,
his rebirth of Bob Dylan
at the Nobel announcement. And then he changed the direction of the world because
I think both of those periods would have been pretty psychoactive times for him.
Yeah. They didn't realize it was a new type of crab. I think maybe they just thought they were fishing out the regular type of crab, but there had been a split. There'd been a split in the species, and one whose meat was psychoactive.
Yeah.
It was a new species, but they fished them all, made them into vol-au-vents.
Fished them all. Send them straight to the Nobel Prize ceremony.
Well, it looked just like the other ones. The only difference was just
the
psychoactive meat.
Mm-hmm. And the irony is that it was the scientists who came out of their shells.
That's right. That is, yeah. And the crabs.
And the crabs. Yeah. That was probably
Oh, no, because they're soft
irony.
Shells. So soft I think shells, you eat, yeah, you keep them in their shell. Mm. You're right. I apologize. And then we got the... early version of sort of online game abuse, but in chess with one guy who impersonates the other person.
Yeah. I think I'm happy to go with the idea that you're covered in tar and you're running around.
Well, then we've also got the early tar-based anonymous abuse.
Great.
How did people used to abuse people anonymously?
Well, you'd have to go down to the pit.
Yeah.
Down to the tar pit, you're covered up.
Lurch out
into the village.
Yeah.
Screaming.
Screaming and walking into peeping through people's windows, yelling at them.
You're fucked. Oh, no. How would you feel? I think ants would also hate the floating food sketch because the crumbs are going to be levitating.
Yeah. Being where ants are, I reckon, is ants' favorite thing.
Yes.
And to take that away from them.
Mm. But I think crumbs would fall off mostly air, like the the puffy area, especially as you're kind of like trying to catch foods, vol-au-vents probably in your mouth. Mm. There'd be a lot of stuff bouncing off and falling on the ground.
Falling on the ground, and the ants would thrive in that environment.
Absolutely.
Okay, ants would love that.
So.
Thank you for giving me back my dog. Really appreciate your generosity. I will treat it well.
Well,
I don't think that's generosity if they're just giving back a dog that they stole.
But it's selfishness if they keep it.
They cleaned the dog and gave it back to him.
The opposite.
And they gave him an extra dog.
Yeah. They said, "I'm sorry for stealing your dog. Here's your dog and a better dog as well."
Whenever people offer a reward for returning a dog, it's never a better dog, is it? I think that is what they should be on the sign. Say, big reward offered. Better dog.
Other dog.
Yeah. If you like stealing dogs, I've stolen a much better dog.
That's the best way of getting your dog back. Because sometimes you just
We know these people want dogs. Yeah. That's why they've stolen the dog.
And the problem is that you, it doesn't matter if it's a shit dog, you love it. The heart wants what it wants, right? Mm.
Yeah.
So
my heart wants a better dog.
Well, we know, yeah, exactly, because the people stealing the dogs, they aren't stealing from a place of, they don't love the dog, they don't have a sentimental attachment.
They just want a dog.
They want a dog, and possibly they think this is the best dog they'll ever see, so they think I'd better take this dog. And then it's just up to you to prove them that there are plenty more dogs in the sea, and they're breathing through Drew's sluice. Because they're on their way to becoming seals.
Loose. Now available for dogs.
Should start a new podcast called Drew Sluice. I don't know why. But like somebody with the Drew Sluice, it may also die.
You get different comedians to talk about their favorite sluice.
I really like it.
And
Nick Mason, if there's any availabilities on the network, there's no sluice-based podcasts presently. I'm just saying it's a real, real gap in the market here.
We started the episode talking about Jack's history of failed podcasts, but we're leaving him with a real winner here.
Yeah. I feel like I've had enough failed podcasts that I've figured it all out, and what I need, and that's sluices. And
I reckon you may have found a gap in the market. A little sluice in the market.
Yeah.
Where there's, I don't think there's any sluice podcasts.
No.
There's a lot of loose podcasts.
A lot of loose podcasts. A lot of two talking heads. Sometimes three.
Hey, and those are the best ones. Thank you so much, Jack. Where can people find you on the internet?
I'm at Jack Drews on Twitter.
And you have a newsletter.
I have a newsletter that I do that you can, the information to sign up to that is on my Twitter.
It's a very good newsletter.
Thank you. I really enjoy doing them. It's a fun little job to write a nice thing every couple of weeks.
And people can find some of your comedy on YouTube.
Yep. And I'm releasing an album of my comedy quite soon. So I don't have a link to that. But if you like my comedy and you would like to hear it, just follow me on Twitter, and I've got an album of that for my comedy festival show. This year.
Yeah. It was a really awesome show. I loved it so much.
And also, thanks. Just YouTube Jack Drews and you'll find a whole bunch of winning bits.
Winning bits is what I call them.
You have some of the winningest bits.
Yeah, and I'm at Alistair TB.
I'm at Stupid Old Andy.
And we're at Two and Tank. You can review us on iTunes. You can sign up to our Patreon and just give money generously, like a man giving another man back his dog. and then also, you should know that we love you.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.